Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Jody E., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, July 26, 2024. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 35, the first paragraph. Today's readers are Deb F. on the 12 steps, Joanne L. reading the 12 traditions, Wendy M. is our reader of the text, Dion R. will read our closing, and Vanessa G. is our backup reader. Christina M. is our newcomer greeter, and announcements will be given by Shelley E. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,604, and this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting share ID number is 21,606. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Deb F. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning, everybody. This is Deb F. in Texas, and thank you, Jody. And the first step is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable, and that's also, most for this meeting, powerless over food. Came to believe, number two, that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Deb F. from Texas. I will now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, Jody. Thank you for your service this month, and thank you to Leah for asking me. And good morning to everybody on the line, especially the newcomers. I am Joanne L. from Rhode Island, still recovering, doing my writing. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain.
Joanne, I think you need to unmute yourself.
Oh, okay. Was I muted? Jody?
Yeah, I think we all were muted. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So do I stop from the beginning?
No.
Okay.
I'm not sure where you were.
Okay. No. I think it was number 7. Let me start with that. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name. I'm so sorry. Oh, my goodness. I'm reading from my cell phone. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, in other public media of communication. In 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Joanne L. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone may share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to remute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 35, paragraph 1. I will now ask Wendy M. to begin reading.
Yes, good morning, Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you so much, Jody, for your service and everyone on the line. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? Okay, great. This is a wonderful paragraph. The first thing that comes to mind, of course, is I must lie to get to the food. I'm going to say that again. I have to lie. In other words, I have to think to get to the food. And I have to get to the food if I'm in the allergy, right? And this whole chapter is about our thinking. So some ways that I've thought, some ways I've used my thinking is that it's in my voice. The disease is in my voice, so it sounds right. So it tells me things like, it's just a piece of apple, you know, in the pie. You can pick up the piece of apple in the pie and it's just a piece of fruit. Or I exercise a lot today. I think I need to add more food. And I don't have to weigh it because it doesn't matter. And so then I become the author of my food as I am the author of my life, right? And then it uses the word drink. The desperate experiment of the first drink, which is always yet another diet. It doesn't even matter what it is. It's the desperate experiment of anything, of blaming people, you know, of gossip, of whatever it is. It's the desperate experiment. This time it won't hurt me, right? But I love adding the word, instead of desperate experiment of the first drink, I like to say of the first think, because we have a problem, right? Or another thought. My body's good. I look good. I don't really think I need to weigh and measure anymore. So it doesn't matter what it is. I just need to get to the food. That's the point, right? And that's what this whole chapter, seriously, is about. And then it says, to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, you know, I went to jail. Why am I telling you? Because it doesn't matter. This disease, the unmanageability of our lives, it becomes, like, huge compared to anything. And not only is it unmanageable, but we keep going back into the saloon, right? And our friends and relatives, whoever, is like, we don't understand it. Well, you don't understand it because you didn't read the doctor's opinion, right? You didn't read that we have a twofold illness. Now, what is the, you know, and how do we get out of the tramp? I call this our tramp, right? I have to get the food and I'm going to do anything. Anything. It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter if I lose my kids. It doesn't matter if I lose my job. It doesn't matter. I've got to get to the food. So what is the solution? The solution is action, right? The opposite of thinking is action.
That's time, Wendy.
And the thank you. Yeah. I mean, how do we get out of think? We act. We take service. We do anything to get out of this trance. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wendy M. from Colorado. I will now take a list of people who'd like to share on this paragraph, but before I do, I'll just remind everyone that although we value your experience greatly, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Who would like to share on this paragraph? Page 35, first paragraph.
Jeannie here. I can share.
Say your name again.
Jeannie.
Jeannie. Gotcha, Jeannie. Who else?
Diane MC in Chicago.
Diane? Diane MC, Chicago.
Alicia R. from Las Vegas.
Alicia R., Las Vegas.
Deb F. from Texas.
Deb F. Texas.
Dion R.
Dion R.
Hillary B. from California. Oh, oops, sorry.
Okay, I got you, Hillary. Okay, we'll stop there. I'm starting with Jeannie. Jeannie, let us know where you're calling from and your initial. Then Diane, Alicia, Deb F., Dion R., and Hillary B. Please go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, good morning, everyone. It's Jeannie N. for Nancy, and I'm from New Jersey.
Okay, go ahead.
Reminded me about the mental twist. When that comes, like, oh, I am doomed, you know? And it explains it on page five, the cycle, how the mental twist, the obsession comes first, and then we eat, and that triggers the allergy, and then the phenomenon triggers the phenomenon of craving. And then a lot of times the remorse. Sometimes we get that vague feeling that we're not doing the right thing if we succumb to that little voice, that mental twist, you know. And when that vague feeling comes, it's like for me, it's already too late. I don't know if that's true, but that's for me. You know, and then, I mean, I have to remember that, you know, when that mental twist comes, I have to go to my higher power, who's God, right away. I mean, I need to do a 10-step, make a phone call, do whatever I have to do. And again, that cycle's on page 4, and then it mentions it on page 24, too, again. I'm also reminded that my brain is wired differently, and that only God and the steps can help me get it rewired. My abstinence is so precious, and it's contingent on how spiritually fit I am, one day at a time. Thank you, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Jeannie N. from New Jersey. Diane M.C., please go ahead.
Thank you for your service. This is Diane M.C. in Chicago. Oh, what sort of thinking dominates? Oh, boy. I wrote next to that, I'm delusional. And I did look it up in our big book dictionary. Delusion, it's a false psychotic belief. False psychotic belief. Unsound and misleading reasoning. That caps just kind of what it is for me. And, you know, later on in the big book, it talks about that sound reasoning just failed to hold me in check. The insane idea won out of that I could just handle one bite. That trigger ingredient was so low on the list of ingredients that it won't matter. Just playing Russian roulette, really, with my abstinence, thinking I now had control. You know, it's just crazy. And I did that for years and years in the program. One more attempt. My mind got me into so much trouble. And that's what I need to focus on today of my thinking. And I do that by daily remembering I have to enlarge my spiritual walk so my higher power can help me with my thinking, and other people. I try not to live with secrets anymore. If I'm aware of something, I just use the phone more, texting, reaching out, being of service, getting out of my head. Number one problem really is within my head, my thinking, that can lead me to pretend I'm not an addict. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Diane MC from Chicago. Alicia R., please go ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Alicia R., recovered compulsive overeater. And I think, you know, it of what was he thinking, right? It really emphasizes the powerlessness to me, right? Prior to recovery, I have no power. I'm not tapped into any kind of power in order to have the ability to not make those decisions, right? And then once I get into recovery, I have to tap into that power in order to have the ability to make those decisions, to not pick that up, right? And I love, you know, what's been said about how it applies to everything, right? Because even in recovery, my thinking, right? Like, to make those decisions throughout the day. I'm a true believer that every choice I make is either bringing me closer to my higher power and recovery or to the next compulsive bite. I also was reminded about the sentence that says, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. On page 30, right? And I will wake up with that voice in my head that sounds like my own voice every single day, trying to get me to take that compulsive bite, right? My disease wants me alone in a dark room, slowly killing myself one bite at a time, right? And that is why I have to wake up and do this program every day, right? It doesn't matter how much time I get. All I have is today, and it's contingent upon my spiritual maintenance for today, right? That's all that's promised, is we get today. And I'm so grateful for that reminder, because my head, my thinking tells me I'm okay and that I'm recovered. I've been doing well, right? This is working for me, you know, and as soon as something's working for me, all of a sudden I've got a brilliant idea to change it. That's that crazy diseased thinking. So super grateful to be here, super grateful to be participating in my recovery. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alicia R. from Las Vegas. Deb F., it's your turn.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, this is Deb F., recovered, but not cured, one day at a time. I'm just really grateful for this healthy family that we know we have an issue, and we have a simple way of working on it, just to go through the big book and the steps and admit our powerlessness. And I know for me that I've always had to be strong. I just have that personality. And but, you know, looking at my thinking, and that's why I love this paragraph, you know, what kind of thinking dominates the compulsive overeater, who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first bite. And I know for me that if my thinking is off, and, you know, a lot of times the thinking about other people, places, or things will be just like the food for me, and I can get going. And thinking about how life is so unfair, how come that person did that to me, you know, and then you know, invariably my head will turn to the food. And so I have to be really vigilant with that. And as a result, I just did another four step on my thinking about those people. And really, trouble is my thinking, and I have to get to what's my part, and, you know, how can I think in a way that supports me instead of gets me back into the addictive realm, you know? And so that's what my fourth step was all about, just being able to let go of that, let go of those things, and to embrace what's my part, embrace what would God have me be. And with that, you know, I just have peace, and I don't have to take that bite. I don't have to do that crazy thing. And I'm just so thankful for all the people that stand in the gap for me and have me, say, hey, wait a minute, what are you thinking? So it's just, this is such a wonderful place to be, you know, matching calamity with serenity. So thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Deb F. from Texas. Dion R., please go ahead.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, family. Hold on, take off that little cranky Bluetooth. I ain't even going to try it. Good morning. Thank you for your service, and just love this family of love. Jim's story. I don't know why. You know, I guess, before they get to Jim's story, they talk about our friends of the first sentence. What sort of thinking dominates Dion? Compulsive overeater who repeated time after time after time after time the desperate experience of, I just want one more. Just give me one more. Just that one more. Dion, you done destroyed everything good to you while you're under influence, right? The big book reminds me, when I'm under the influence of a substance, whether it's just alcohol, for me, my being substance, or my killer substance, or my poison substance, or my bad behavior substance, the world can do whatever it wants with me, right? I have lost the power to think, right? So why are you doing this? One more time. I'm going to pray this time. No, next time I'm going to pray and fast. Fall. Keep falling in the same hole. Just that one more. Just one. I promise you, Dion, and the whole world, parents, I'm going to do it right because I want to, right? That one more time. Oh, the thing is, it keeps reminding us. Yeah, what sort of thinking? Crazy, insanity, whatever you want to call it. That's what it was, purity, insane. And I used to say, oh, well, I'm not. Yeah, if you can't stop food or food drop on the floor and you just pick it up, put it in your mouth, just kind of like a little insanity, just a little bit, you know. Or if you say something, you see something and, you know, and know it's not good for you. Know it's going to kill your body that you promise. That's what it thinks. Insane. And the legal definition from insane, I believe, is not thinking straight. For me, that's what it is. It's not thinking clearly. I know they have more diagnoses, but yes, I was insane. And when food got me, any of my drug of choice, I'm powerless. So, yes, I'm powerless, but that doesn't mean I'm surrendering to the power of the drug. Again, I'm surrendering to the power of this group, power that I got and found in this group in countless places. So thank you so much for allowing me to just be honest. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Dion R. Hillary B., it's your turn.
Good morning. This is Hillary B. from Southern California, gratefully recovered for today. What a great paragraph. What sort of thinking? Everyone already said it. Crazy. So I spent so many years in living in this paragraph, always being dominated by the desperate experiment of the first bite. I can handle it this time. It's not gonna, I'll only have one bite or one piece or one, you know, or two, maybe two. And never did I stop there. Never. But I kept telling myself, because I had so many issues that caused me difficulty. Mental issues, emotional issues, not physical issues. Issues that were made up by my brain. Issues that, you know, like, oh, what are they thinking of me? Oh, they're thinking this. Or, oh, what do I look like? Or, oh, I'm the worst one. Or, oh, everybody's better than I am. Oh, he's not treating me right. Oh, you know, my daughter is going to make me look bad. All these thoughts that made me miserable. I needed food because that was the only thing that could give me relief. And since I've given up the food, I've given up alcoholic foods, finally after decades of being in recovery and not working it, thinking I was working it, but not working it, finally, with this abstinence, I get the strength with my higher power, with you guys supporting me. I get the strength to feel the pain and to see that I am causing it to myself, and to see one more time my troubles are of my own making. My own making is causing me the pain that's causing me to eat. My own troubles or my own thinking is causing me the pain that's causing me to create this fantasy world where I can use food to feel better, and it ain't gonna hurt me this time. Lies, lies, delusions, delusions, delusions. It's so wonderful to be out of those delusions, even though it doesn't mean life is easy. It doesn't mean I'm joyful every day. It doesn't mean I'm peaceful every moment. It means I'm living in reality without having to use a drug to change the way I feel. Thank you for sharing. Thank you. Thank you for timing me. I pass. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Hillary B. from California. Okay, we are on page 35, the first full paragraph. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time and after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Who else would like to share?
Denise K. Pennsylvania.
I heard Alex K. That's all I heard.
Aaron E. from Ohio.
Someone E. from Ohio?
Sharon E.
I still didn't
Denise.
Hear it.
That was
Sharon.
Sharon. Sharon E. Okay.
Denise
Kit S. from Florida.
Denise. I got Denise.
Kit S.
Jenny
from Florida.
Kit from Florida. And
Cheryl S. from Nevada.
Cheryl S., Nevada.
McCall.
I've got whoever just said their name, you were breaking up.
McCall.
Okay, let's stop there. Hopefully we have enough time for all of you. I have Alex K., Sharon E., Denise, Kit, Cheryl S., and McCall. Please go ahead, Alex.
Hi. Did you say my name? I was unmuting.
Yes, I did.
Hi. Thanks, Jody. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Alex K. in California, compulsive eater, giving a reprieve for today. Well, my thinking was either insane or I wasn't thinking at all when I took the first bite. Sometimes it's the lies of the disease that tell me it's okay, I'll control it this time. I'll just have a bite of my binge food. A bite can't hurt. I've had a hard day. I deserve a treat. This will help me feel better. And I get temporary amnesia. I can't remember all the misery eating those foods caused me in the past. and how I couldn't stop. And other times I planned a binge. I knew that it wasn't good for me, that I'd probably regret it later, but I decided to do it anyway because the brief escape and the familiar pain that followed was better than the pain of feelings and living. And then there were times when I had no thought of compulsively eating, yet I suddenly found myself doing it and couldn't understand how or why it happened. But once I'd started, I couldn't stop, and I was trapped in that vicious cycle. Sometimes I didn't want to stop, and even when I did, I couldn't stop, no matter how hard I tried. I'm so grateful. I found this solution with the steps in my higher power and getting the treatment I need for my disease, and I need that treatment every day, this program. And for some years, I haven't felt the need to hurt myself. It's a miracle. It shows the power of this program and my higher power doing for me what I could never do for myself. Thanks all for helping me with recovery today. Pass.
Thank you, Alex K. from California. Sharon E. from Ohio, please go ahead.
Hi, all. This is Sharon E. from Ohio. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm kind of in an echoey room. Living one day at a time, compulsive overeater. I was reminded when I read Mystifying